Welcome, everyone, to a special mini-episode of Steeping Together, where we explore a specific topic within the vast world of tea with the tea enthusiast. I'm your tea-obsessed host, Marika, and as usual, so excited to talk about today's topic. So, tea is for drinking. Honestly, I feel like this comes as no surprise to anyone. Drunk hot or iced, as a latte or not, with carbonated water or cold brewed, tea is one of the most versatile beverages on the planet. But we seldom discuss the fact that tea is an herb. This plant can be used much in the same way one would use other herbs such as oregano, thyme, and sage. Tea is also an incredibly versatile ingredient that can be used when cooking, and quite frankly, I feel we just don't discuss this enough. So much so that even after all these years working in the tea industry, I can count on one hand how many times I have used tea in my cooking. I guess, I don't know, I'm scared and don't even really know where to begin, and I have a sneaky suspicion that I am not alone in this. So today, I have invited Nadia de la Vega, a frequent guest on this podcast, because out of everyone I know, she does the most baking, cooking, and recipe development with tea. Welcome, Nadia, and please be gentle. Guide me into this world.
I will. Don't worry. I think it's easier than what we think it is. So oh. I'll be very gentle.
Okay, thank you, because I don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen. I spend a lot of time watching other people in the kitchen, but yeah, I'm a little hesitant about this topic. So let's get to it. But first, for anyone who would have missed your previous times on the podcast, who are you?
Okay, let's keep it brief this time. So I'm Nadia de la Vega. I'm the Director of Tea Sustainability and Content here at David's Tea. I've been working here for almost 10 years. And throughout the time that I've been here, I've been working in anything from content to recipe development.
There are so many recipes on our website that you iterated, created. It's always a really exciting day when we have to do photo shoots in office because you bring in like cakes and cookies and ice cream.
Yes.
And they're always so good. So, okay, my understanding of tea is that, as I said at the top of the episode, it's an herb. Right? It's a plant. It is a plant that is dried, oxidized, processed. But when you're using it in cooking, you should really think of it like you think of thyme or oregano or chive or any other dried herb that you would use in cooking. Am I correct in this assumption?
I think so, especially if you're thinking more for savory. I think of it like an accent or a flavoring. Like when I'm baking cookies, and, you know, I always add some vanilla or some vanilla extract. So then you can maybe substitute one of your favorite teas to impart that flavor.
That makes a lot of sense. You've already edified me enough that I feel comfortable in saying what I'm about to say. Because you'll add vanilla extract or vanilla bean to a dish, but that does not necessarily make it a vanilla cookie or a vanilla pudding. It's an accent that you use combined with other ingredients to make your blend or your dish more harmonious, more balanced.
Exactly. I think it really depends on kind of what your goal is. So again, for a chocolate chip cookie, you always add vanilla extract. So that if that's your way to make a balance, that's the way that you can think of tea. But sometimes when I'm doing like very specifically matcha recipes, I really want to taste the matcha in there.
Right.
So it depends on what you're going for, that you can use it as an accent or as the main character.
Okay, because this is my problem with most cookies. And I don't know, I can only think of cookies because I think it happens a lot. It happens in beauty products as well. Like you'll have a body lotion that's tea flavored, and it always smells like lemon Barina. Like it never, like I'm always like, this doesn't smell like tea. And then you'll have like a cream of Earl Grey macaron, and it just kind of tastes like bergamot. It doesn't taste like the tea. And so I have had a tendency to dismiss it. But what you're saying is actually, maybe if they just hadn't called it that and just said, hey, one of the ingredients in there is tea, I probably wouldn't have been so irritated, shall we say.
But I get what you're saying, because you're like, if you say, oh, Earl Grey, I want to taste the tea. Like, where's the tea? Whereas it may be featuring Earl Grey. You could have been like, oh, okay, so it's not going to be you're not giving me the tea, you're just giving me a hint of it.
Yeah, all I'm asking for is for them to start calling
it... Be clear.
Be clear. Call it an Earl Grey lemon cookie, and I am on board. But if you just keep calling it Earl Grey cookie, I'm not tasting the tea. Okay, so there's that aspect where, like, that dried leaf, be it black, oolong, green, whatever, is more of an accent to your dish. But matcha itself, being a ground powder, kind of becomes the star of the show, right?
Yes, that way. At least in the recipes that I've developed, normally tea is more like a supporting or an accent or, like you said, you know, like an herb to balance it out.
Mm-hmm.
But with matcha, I think that you really want to highlight the matcha.
Also, it just feels, and again, don't know what I'm talking about here, but it just feels that anytime I've had something with matcha, because of the nature of that tea itself, I do taste the matcha. I do taste the leaf a little bit more, like a matcha cookie or a matcha ice cream, for example, tastes like matcha. There's no doubt about it. And that's because the leaf itself is integrated into the recipe, as opposed to with any other tea, you would only be able to include the infusion and not the leaf itself, yeah, right?
You're correct.
So right.
When we're doing recipes, or at least the ones that I've done, we're infusing the tea first and making a very concentrated version of the tea. So think of it as like your vanilla extract. Instead of using vanilla extract, I'm using a very concentrated version of the tea so that it imparts some of its flavor. So right. If I have a cherry tea, mm-hmm. I want to make a very concentrated version so that that imparts the flavor into the baking that I'm doing.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. A vanilla extract is a concentrate of vanilla. If you're going to use tea, you've got to make a concentrate of tea so that it can hold its own against all the flour and sugar. And, you know, if we're talking about a soup or a stew, the meat or the broth, you need to make something very, 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 very concentrated, which means putting a lot of leaves and very little water in order to get all of that flavor out.
Yeah, especially when you're thinking, if you're baking and you're just using the infusion, you have to think that throughout the baking process, a lot of the aromatics are going to kind of evaporate. So you really want that to be very concentrated so that at the end, when it's done baking, you have at least a hint of the tea that you used.
It's so funny. I just realized just right now, I think because in my mind, when you're making a concentrate, you're using a high temperature hot water. So I'm like, it'll be fine if it bakes because it's already been in really hot water. But no, baking is longer than infusing a tea. Duh, I feel kind of silly just like realizing it now.
But you have a point. So the first, you're doing your infusion in the water that is required. I like to use the water temperature that is required for the specific tea so that I get the flavor compounds that I want. So that, for example, if I'm using green tea, I don't burn the leaves so right. That my result is not bitter. But yeah, throughout the cooking process, a lot of those oils evaporate. That's why it's very important to do concentrates, I think.
That makes sense.
Concentrates okay. Is like my step one.
Concentrates seems to be key. Whether it's matcha or an infusion, you really want a concentrated version of that tea.
There's only very few recipes that I think we've done that it's more for the loose leaf that you would use the loose leaf as opposed to a concentrate.
Okay. Feeling safe, feeling secure, feeling ready to start cooking with tea. I know that my rule of thumb is concentrates. Step two, where do I start? Because I feel like in the West, tea is incorporated predominantly when we talk about food in baking.
Yes.
And when you're in the East, it's included predominantly in soups. And I understand the soup aspect, right, Nadia? Because a soup is kind of like an infusion. I mean, at least the amount of water means that you'll be allowing your tea to steep for a long time. So when I was in China, jasmine infused soups or soups with smoked teas like lapsang souchong, I've done that at home. I've taken some tea, put it in a little like cheesecloth, put it in my soup, and then taken it out with my bay leaves at the same time that I take out my bay leaves, and I've got a beautiful broth that has a tea flavor to it. That feels easy. Do we recommend that our listeners start with soups or start with baking? Because I think everyone immediately wants to like launch into these really complicated like cakes with like four T's in them, and then they get disappointed. So
yeah,
baby steps.
Baby steps. I think my recommendation, I think with anything in the kitchen, is start where you're comfortable.
Mm.
If someone is more comfortable with baking, then you should start there. If you're more comfortable with savory, then start with savory. And as we both know, in the history of tea, it was initially used in soups. And in the West side, and let's say in North America, we're more used to baking or sharing recipes that are baked,
mm-hmm.
sweet recipes, as opposed to those soups and stews. So, yeah, you need to find your comfort zone. Okay. And then I think explore from there. Because you're entering another realm. It's also
baking is another realm. Baking and desserts and cooking other, you know, savory dishes or cooking a regular meal. I've always equated kind of cooking as an art, but baking and desserts, that's a science. You don't mess around too much with baking. You can't just like add an extra egg. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and when I make a salad or a soup, I'm like, I'm going to put a little bit more vinegar. I'm going to add one more bay leaf. Like, yeah. I'm freer to play. But with baking, it's like, hey, this amount of sugar and only this amount of sugar.
It's funny because as we've spoken about it in other podcasts, I'm like a trained scientist. So yes, when I'm baking, that's when I bring out my, you know, my balance so I can weigh my ingredients. But it's funny because once I get really used to a recipe, I do it by hand. Like, you know, so I feel like that's always when you delve into cooking, there's always that mixture of art and science. And then you just kind of let your instincts tell you once you get really used to it, like, does the dough need a little bit more water or
okay.
not? You know, but baby steps.
Let's exactly.
Take it back. So start where you're comfortable with and start with something that you like because you want to enjoy the process.
Right.
The whole point of cooking with tea is not to stress whether it's going to come out perfect or not. It's about, I want to enjoy. Let me explore and try something new.
I think you're always going to enjoy a lot more what you're eating when you've actually had kind of fun doing it. If it's been a huge stressor. I always feel, I watch my husband cook. If a meal is a huge stressor for him, he rarely enjoys the meal, regardless of how good it is. You know, sometimes I'll be like, oh, this is so delicious. And he's like, took me 3 hours to do this thing. And he's just happy that the experience is over. But I like that idea of comfort zone. One of the things that I can cook, not well, but I can do it, is oatmeal.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that when I worked in the spice industry, I used to recommend people who were using spices for the first time. I would say, just add some cinnamon, add some nutmeg,
go wild.
Exactly. You want to be really out there? Try cardamom on your oatmeal, you know, because that's something that's relatively easy to make. So that's my go-to for trying new things. Can we do the same thing with tea?
For sure. One of my all-time favorite recipes that we've done here is just very simple, infusing tea into oatmeal. So basically you cook your oatmeal as you would. So we're doing it old school.
Okay, okay.
We have a pot.
Do we have a wood fire oven? Is this what you're implicating? Have we?
Not that
We've
pot.
Woken up, we've chopped the wood.
Okay. No, we're starting in a pot. You normally put, I don't know, some people use all milk.
Mm-hmm.
I normally do half water, half milk, and then put my oatmeal.
Ooh.
What do you do?
I do the thing that my husband showed me, which is I just cook my oatmeal in water, and then when half of the water is kind of evaporated, then I add just a hint of milk and vanilla extract.
So
it's still a large quantity, but we use a lot less milk than the average recipe.
So there's two ways that you can go about it. And I think that the fun thing to do is to try both ways and see which one you like better.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either start with your tea concentrate. Let's pick Forever Nuts because Forever Nuts has cinnamon, has apple.
Yeah.
So it's a very comforting taste, especially for oatmeal. So you do your tea concentrate. You put that on the stove. You add your oatmeal. Then you top it with your milk And if you want, at the end, you add vanilla extract. Or the way that you add your vanilla extract at the end, you can cook your oatmeal your regular way, water,
right,
add the milk, and then add the tea.
Oh.
I personally like cooking the oatmeal in the tea so that the flavors blend together. And then it gets this beautiful kind of pinkish color thanks to the beets and Forever Nuts. So
it makes a lot more sense. Even though thank you so much for letting me add the tea in the way that would make me more comfortable. But just as you were describing it, like cooking the oatmeal in the infused tea, I feel like that's just going to create a much richer profile. And it's not that much out of my habits that I would feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. You basically boil your kettle, make a tea.
Yeah.
More concentrate.
Yeah.
Use that water to cook your oatmeal in. And then at the end, you top it with your milk or, yeah.
That sounds delicious.
And it's easy.
Yeah.
It's
no, that easy. Sounds really easy. I feel like I've been looking at a lot of recipes where they're asking me to like buy new pots and pans to make these things happen.
Or like have a sous vide.
Yeah. Oh, the sous vide. I'm not buying a sous vide. Hey, world, I'm not buying a sous vide. Stop showing me recipes with this. Yeah, I don't want to. I think, like you said, it's about the fun and it's about incorporating it already into the cooking that you do. You don't have to start making. If you never made macaron at home, why would you start now? That just seems really daunting and unfun.
I think you have to start where you're, like, an oatmeal, it's a perfect way to start. If you're a cookie lover or you like making cookies, a chocolate chip cookie recipe with matcha, it's a great way to start.
Okay, how do I do that? I want to make chocolate chip cookies with matcha. What am I doing? Tell me what I'm doing.
I like to add the matcha to my dry ingredients.
Oh, like just the matcha powder itself.
Yeah.
Oh.
So again, and here is where you can play. So you can add the matcha to your dry ingredients, or you can just do like I want to call it a slurry of matcha, because you would add the matcha and add just very little water and add it to your wet ingredients.
Okay. So if I had to come away with some rules of thumb, I feel like making a concentrate is super important. Water temperature, if you're making that concentrate, you're still adhering to a certain amount of degrees depending on the tea base. You know, if it's green tea, don't burn your leaves, and you're steeping it for a longer time to make that concentrate. But here you're talking about adding the matcha to your dry ingredients, and you said it in a way that makes me think other people are not necessarily doing that.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. It's just that was an inflection in your voice where you're like, I put it in my dry ingredients. Like you've been on some kind of internet matcha forum fighting with people.
No, I'm just saying that's my preferred way, because in this case, I'm thinking about it like I'm going to sift it with my flour.
Right.
And for those of you that don't know, we have a great chocolate chip matcha cookie recipe in our blog. So I really encourage you to try it out, because it's one of my go-to and one of the office favorites here.
Yeah, no, green chocolate chip cookies that taste like matcha. What's not to love? Yeah.
And then that's where you have fun. If you don't like dark chocolate, because that's what we used in the recipe, mm-hmm. substitute it for white chocolate. Mm. I don't know. Go crazy. Put some nuts.
Okay, so the matcha, you can use it with your dry ingredients. There's another recipe that I love on the website that I know you developed. I do not remember the exact name of it now, because my brain doesn't work that way. It's the cream of Earl Grey beer cake?
Yes.
Okay. I remember the day you brought that into office, and I remember thinking, this woman is magic. Explain to me how I would, because I'm not adding my cream of Earl Grey leaves to my dry ingredients.
No. Here, when I was developing this recipe, we were working on a beer collab. So the way I started developing it was, let's pretend that my cream of Earl Grey is my vanilla. Because cream of Earl Grey has already those creamy tones. It's giving me the zest I want. So beer really helps in a cake to make it really nice and moist. I know that word can be triggering for some people, but I use it a lot to describe baking. I'm sorry.
I like a moist cake. I don't feel triggered by it, but
okay. That's good. But I feel a lot of people do. But anyways,
what forums have you been on that I'm just not a part of? We don't mean to trigger anybody. I'm not. No. I'm genuinely not making fun of anybody who's uncomfortable with that word. But I just feel like your internet and my internet are different.
I'm in the cooking.
You're on the cooking side of the internet, right?
And here, I this was a recipe where I wanted to taste cream of Earl Grey.
That's what I loved about the cake.
I wanted the essence of cream of Earl Grey. I wanted to taste the vanilla. I wanted to taste the tea. I wanted to taste the bergamot. So that's how we used it. We used it as a very, very intense concentrate. And together with the beer, it just makes a beautiful cake. And if I remember correctly, oh my God, it's been more than 3 years. We also used it. I also used it in the frosting so that you can feel it. I wanted to. This was one of the recipes where the cream of Earl Grey was the star.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Because I remember you offering it to me and I was like, oh, great. Another thing where there's supposed to be tea in it and I'm not going to taste it at all. But I work here now and I just met this woman a few months ago, so I have to politely eat her cake. And it was so good. It was so cream of Earl Grey forward. And I think I forgot that you put it in the frosting too. That's the thing. I think a lot of recipes are like, add some tea and then call it a tea recipe. You layered it into the cake itself and then into the frosting, making it the star of the show.
Like you said in the beginning, I feel it like that. It can be really upsetting when they name something with the word tea and you're like, oh, I'm going to feel it. And then you get it and you're like, oh, wah.
It's mostly upsetting because I feel like they're marketing a product directly to me and I've spent literally thousands of dollars on things that have the word tea in it and don't taste the tea.
I've had that kind of disappointment as well. That's why I sometimes when it's bottled, I don't buy it because I'm like, is it going to taste like it?
Are they lying to me again? Is this just going to be lemon verbena and not Camellia sinensis? Yeah, so I feel safer. I feel ready to get into the kitchen, which I think is a sentence I haven't said in many, many years. If I'm going into my kitchen, Nadia, what are like the top three teas that I should start with? Because we have over 100 teas here at David's Tea. There's thousands of teas on the market. What are the three teas that I need to have in order to have the best possible experience in the kitchen?
Okay, question. Are we talking savory or sweet or both?
I'd say both, just because now that you've equipped me with this knowledge, I don't want to limit myself.
Okay. So for sure, something like matcha matsu.
Okay.
Matcha matsu is one of my go-tos. It also has that very grassy flavor. So in baking, you'll feel it because I've used something more creamy like a ground cru or a ceremonial matcha, and then because they're so creamy, I only get the creaminess. I don't get the real like fresh grassy flavor umami that I want. So matcha matsu.
That makes sense to me. It's just a really good matcha that isn't. It's not ceremonial matcha. I'm not breaking the bank on a tea that's going to be cooked inherently, right?
Yeah. And what I like about matcha is because it has those grassy tones, you can also use it in savory cooking.
Oh.
I really like pairing matcha with fish or shellfish.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Tell me about this fish matcha situation. Okay.
And it's I don't even think we have it on the blog. So we're getting
a podcast, a Steeping Together exclusive.
Yeah. I like to put some matcha into salt, into like a fleur de sel or something. So then, for example, if I'm sautéing some shrimp, I'll just sprinkle it at the end and you just get a little bit of the heat. You know, sorry, I'm gesturing like I'm sautéing a pan, but you guys can't see that.
No, the visual is great. You're like, and then I do this and I'm like, this is an auditory medium. They don't know what you're doing. No, but it makes sense. Yeah, just in the salt. Do you half matcha, half salt?
Yes, that's kind of what I do. And then, but right at the end so that you serve it, so that you do one twist or one kind of flip from the pan, and then you serve it so that you don't burn your matcha, but you feel it at the end. So I really like it like that. And the same with fish.
Okay. Oh, that sounds delightful. And I like the versatility of it, that if I want to, you know, bake or if I want to do something savory, matcha comes into play really easily, really flavor forward, tastes like tea without overwhelming the dish that you've made.
Yes.
Okay. Number two.
Cream of Earl Grey.
Okay.
Because it's a very flavor-packed tea.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a black tea base. So to me, I feel like black tea can easily translate, whereas there's other teas that I find harder. Like a white tea base, it's very hard for me to use in cooking because the flavor is so delicate that by the time it's done baking, I really don't feel the tea. So a black tea, like cream of Earl Grey.
And why cream of Earl Grey and not Earl Grey?
Great question. I think because our organic cream of Earl Grey has that hint of creaminess and vanilla that really will help support the rest of your baking. If you're not a cream of Earl Grey fan and you're more into savory cooking, then my recommendation would be something, a black tea, but more with more character, like a Lapsang Souchong.
Interesting, because as you were talking about the creaminess of the cream of Earl Grey, and again, I do not cook, but I almost feel like, what if I added cream of Earl Grey to like a beef stew? Would that make sense?
I'll let you in. I don't know if it makes sense. Why not try it out? Maybe
okay.
It does.
Yeah, I'm asking you. It's my kitchen. it's my fantasy kitchen.
because I've tried something like a silk dragon jasmine, again, with shellfish. And it works really nicely. Because you know the typical, like, let's go to the 90s.
Okay. I love being in the 90s. Let's just stay there.
When chefs were like, oh, I add a little bit of vanilla to my lobster.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yes. Remember? For those of you that don't remember, it was a serious 4-year period of our lives where there was vanilla in every lobster roll.
So I'm like, well, if they can put vanilla, why can't I put something like jasmine?
Right.
To bring a heat. Like a sense of a floral or something more, let's say, sweeter. It's not sweet, but...
Yeah, something, yeah.
You know? So why not? Why not put it in a stew?
Okay.
But here, now you're making me think. Now I'm going to have to come back with a response because how would I... Because you would need to balance the rest of the flavors.
Yes.
I think here you would need way more aromatic spices. Cardamom.
Yeah, I'm thinking of cardamom specifically. I love cardamom, so yeah.
I'm going to like the spice route, you know?
Yeah. I could see that because I have a tendency on the few times I've cooked to add like nutmeg to a beef stew and other spices that are very round, like sapote and things like that. And so that made me think about the cream of Earl Grey. But I think if we're starting out,
Let's not
overcomplicate it. Cream of Earl Grey, really, really good for desserts. And also, free your mind.
Yeah.
Play around. If you want to add it to your beef stew, we're not here to stop you.
And if you're more into savory and you don't want the cream of Earl Grey, I would do something like Lapsang.
But we're sticking to like a flavored black tea as your second recommendation.
Yeah.
All right. So for your last pick, what are you recommending?
Here I'm going in the herbal and rooibos category.
Okay.
Whether it is forever nuts or just peachy, strawberry rhubarb parfait.
Mm.
Like you pick your fruit, I would say.
Okay.
Do you want something more apple cinnamony? Forever nuts. Do you want like a juicy peach? Just peachy. Mm. Or do you want something more on the berries side?
Mm-hmm.
Then strawberry rhubarb parfait. And there you... Let's go back to the oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want an apple and cinnamon oatmeal, or do you want peaches and cream?
I have never thought of that. I want a peaches and cream oatmeal right now. I'm dead serious. I'm so serious. That's awesome.
Or strawberries, you know? You pick it, and that's where you go.
Oh, my gosh. Because, oatmeal is such a cool example because a lot of the times I will add fresh fruit as a topping to my oatmeal to give it that kind of fruitiness, that astringency, that the thing to balance out the other flavors. Nadia, I want a just peachy oatmeal. Forever Nuts oatmeal sounded great. It's
just
also
peachy.
Pink. Sounds great. But I want a just peachy oatmeal.
I'm a peaches
oatmeal.
And cream girl.
Oh.
you can still top it up, you know?
Yeah.
That's giving you kind of the background flavor, but you can still add on your add-ons. Top it up with whatever you want.
Oh, Nadia.
Yes.
This is so exciting because not only I knew that you were going to clarify this for me. I knew that you were going to take my little baby hand and explain to me how to cook with tea. and I knew that I would come out informed. But now I'm like genuinely excited to start cooking with tea.
Yeah, it's like another flavor that you've unlocked. Unlocked a new flavor. I'm not a gamer, but
no, that's amazing. No, that's amazing because I think if you're a tea enthusiast, incorporating tea into every single aspect of your day to day is going.
Kind of the next step.
It's kind of the next step. And then sometimes I think, you know, I've bought matchas in the past or flavored teas in the past that I enjoyed but weren't my cup of tea that I didn't want to just use infused. And instead of throwing it out or, you know, usually I gift it to someone. And I'm like, hey, do you like this kind of tea? I think I can start cooking with it, which is really liberating because it's more sustainable. And as the director of tea content and sustainability, wow, Nadia.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. And like I said, like, you know, there's teas that you can reseep. There's some teas that have so much flavor that you can reseep it and still get a very flavorful cup. So, you know, don't throw it out.
Don't
reseep
throw it.
Do an oatmeal. Your kid, like, best breakfast.
Everyone will be happy. That's an easy breakfast. Well, I cannot thank you enough. This has been amazing. Maybe you'll come back and give us more recipes because I feel like we only scratched the surface of what you've done in the kitchen with tea.
Well, for those of you that are interested, like I said, we have tons of recipes in the blog. But, I mean, have me here. I love talking tea and recipes, especially cooking. You've been to my house, so you know.
I know, exactly. Yeah, that's how I knew you would be perfect to address this topic. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I cannot wait to get back in the kitchen. And thank
really?
You.
Really?
I want a Just Peachy oatmeal. That alone will get me back in the kitchen. So yeah, no, I'm genuinely going to try that tomorrow morning. It's going to be a lot of fun. Oh, wow. Well, thank you. And thank you for listening to today's mini episode. If you'd like to reach us with comments, questions, or topics for another mini episode, you can do so at steeping.together@davidstea.com or through our website, davidstea.com. Have a great week. And happy steeping, everyone.
Happy steeping.